7:45 on a Saturday morning means it's time for a wine chat with our friend Jack Farrell from Haskell's, family run for a long time. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning, Denny. How are you today?
I'm fine. It's good to hear your voice again. Yeah. And
sorry, I missed you last week. I was in jolly old England, and actually, I was flying home a week ago today. So,
Were you visiting the royal family?
But I was back checking on the wedding.
Oh, I see. seeing all the thank you notes were sent.
About that a couple of weeks ago, when Roger and Charlie went to Prince Charles and Diana's wedding, and we're broadcasting live for an entire week prior to the wedding. But at any rate, no, I went to a food and wine conference in London, and it was absolutely dazzling. We only had one day of rain, and a lot of the meetings were at the old guild halls and castles around town. It was just very, very educational. Number one, English food has improved by quantum leaps from when I first started to come over here 50 years ago. You know, you'd be hard-pressed to get anything but a good slice of roast beef is about the best you could hope for, and maybe some halfway decent fish and chips. Today, that's all changed, and London is as much a world food headquarters as is Paris or New York or any major city or Minneapolis. I mean, on the cutting edge, one of the restaurants we went to was a new restaurant, and the place was called Le Trumpet. The fellow owns three restaurants, and he served a Sebring with a wasabi and pea sauce, and you'd think pea, little round peas. Of course, it was springtime. Almost every restaurant we were in features something of pea sauce because the English love spring peas. So, but anyhow, this bream with this and the wasabi, it was served ice cold, and the wasabi was infused in ice that had been sprinkled on top of the fish. I'm telling you, it was one of the most remarkable dishes I've ever had. And to have to say, well, I had it in London, is a real compliment to the high quality of the foods in London. And most interesting thing from my vantage point is, you know, June is a month for weddings, and champagne is as popular in June as it is in January almost, because people getting married and want that instant celebration, which champagne seems to bring to any occasion. After all, the pop of the champagne cork is one of the senses that really get appealed to. You know something is exciting, the champagne cork pops, you're going to have some sparkling wine. And, you know, sparkling wine is made all over the world. There isn't a single wine-producing area in the entire world that doesn't also make sparkling wine. And it's difficult to make. Well, guess who has jumped into the fray to make sparkling wine? The Brits. I couldn't believe it. 75 miles south of London are all sorts of champagne vineyards. They're growing Chardonnay and Mouniéret and Pinot Noir to blend into sparkling wine. And what 20 years ago was a hobby that maybe produced 1,000, 1,500 bottles of sparkling wine, today has turned into a large industry. And last year they produced in England, I'm still dazzled by this, over 7 million bottles of sparkling wine. It's just incredible. And those sparkling wines they make are kind of pricey and a little too acidic for my taste, but the Brits obviously love them, and they love them so much that starting this year, they're beginning to export them to the United States. And that was interesting from my vantage point to go and see that, because we very much at Haskell's like to be on the cutting edge of importing things. And so I got a good firsthand view of what they're doing in England with sparkling wines. And it is amazing to me. What it really points up is, whether you want to accept global warming or climate change, the climate change is a real fact of life. And that's one of the reasons that all of a sudden, you know, they've been trying for 6,000 years in Britain to grow grapes, and they haven't been very successful. They do pretty well with cider and not too bad with mead, but they never, ever could get the hang of making table wines in England. Well, now, with this warming. Actually, September has become a warm month for the Brits, and the late ripening, they don't start harvest until 2 weeks after champagne is done. But, you know, it's that part of England has the same soil base as you do in the area around Champagne, that chalky base. So they do get wonderfully acidic grapes, and the grapes are producing a very unique sparkling wine that is very high quality, I'd say. And it was very pleasing to me to see all of these new companies start. I think there must be probably 15 installations making sparkling wine south of London. And you're really out there. It's a remote, even though it's 75 miles from one of the world's busiest capitals, you feel like you're in the remote part of the world. And, you know, when you think about new vineyard areas, you maybe think of, oh, some of the old Soviet states, or you might think of someplace in China, or that they're going to grow grapes, which incidentally China's making a statement. They're growing lots of grapes at the moment and making wine. But I think the most telling thing was two big champagne companies, Piper Heidsieck and Pommeray, have purchased land in England and are preparing to open vineyards there and make sparkling wine. So that does add a great deal of credibility, in my opinion. Once the champagne house, it's like California. I'll never forget when Domaine Chandon opened up out in the Napa Valley. I mean, it was just a revelation to everybody in the wine business that the French were interested in California. Who could believe it? I mean, we make this wine there, it's not so hot, blah, 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 and yet these wonderful French are going to come there and make sparkling wine. Well, they did, and it sort of enabled people in California bragging rights that the land was so great that the French were coming over to do it. And today, as we know, Chandon makes a very lovely sparkling wine, and but it was kind of an endorsement that's a great area. And that's what they have here in England, this endorsement of two big champagne houses coming in and a couple more looking at. Apparently Moët & Chandon is looking at some real estate there too. And in fact, it's rumored that they actually bought about 1,500 acres that they're planning to plant vineyards on. But that's just a rumor at the moment. It wasn't substantiated at all. But the trip to England was really worthwhile, and the ciders they make there today are just, I think, wonderful. And it's so nice to see that this trend of craft beers and craft cider is all over the world. It isn't just in the United States. They're doing these craft ciders all over southern England that are just remarkable, low in alcohol, full of fruit. Very, very interesting, and I even got a kick out of I'm not a big fan of mead, and for our listeners that don't know, mead is a wine that's made from honey. Yes, you heard me right. Honey. Imagine that. It's very, very sweet, and I've never been a big fan of it because it is so sweet. However, I had a blueberry mead that I thought really tasted very good. It just shows you what these craft people, the imagination, blending blueberries with mead to produce some alcoholic beverage is really kind of unique. And a little sip of that after dinner might not be so bad. Might make me a fan of mead. I don't know. But the really telltale thing is how the wine industry the world over is changing right now. It's experimental. They're doing new things. And new vineyards, imagine, in England is just so hard for me to get my head around it because the area has always been so cold and damp and rainy and not enough sunshine, which leads me to believe that there are probably parts of the United States that still are waiting to be discovered as the next great spot. Maybe not the Napa Valley, but maybe the Simi Valley or someplace to discover new wines. Because, you know, as we've talked on this show many, many times, the New Zealand table wine industry isn't even 40 years old yet. They, you know, they only made fortified wines in New Zealand prior to that. Now they make these wonderful table wines that are coveted all over the world. And this could happen with the English wines. As I said, at the moment, I find them kind of expensive, sort of pricey for what they are, but they're a good new step. And the English love it because they're drinking almost 7 million bottles of this stuff a year. And I don't think it's all out of national pride. And incidentally, Denny, they did serve an English wine at the recent wedding that garnered so much press at home. The Paul Roger was the official champagne of the wedding, which is a very famous house in Champagne. Was Winston Churchill's favorite champagne. But they did have a toast at the party that night with English bubbly. So they're at least getting a royal endorsement.
I think that's great. It's interesting about the food you can find in London now is really improved. That's kind of good, especially if there's going to be another Good Neighbor tour there. I'd like to find that out.
I've always said we've gotten great meals in England, but you know, just regular day to day, that's hot. But boy, now has that ever changed?
That's really changed.
It's just remarkable how good. Well, I think that's true all over the world.
I think you're right.
It's just evolution, and it's good. It's really, it makes travel a lot more fun. That's for certain.
Well, if you want some fun, and speaking of good, you stop in at any one of the Haskell's locations. Those folks would be glad to help you out find exactly what you need.
Exactly. We travel the world to bring to Minneapolis the finest every vineyard in every country offers. The folks at Haskell's love to talk about wine, and today is the start of our famous summer wine sale. Yes, it starts today and goes all the way through the entire summer, and I'll tell you what values there are. There's wonderful wine value. You just tell the folks what you're going to throw on the barbie, and they'll pick a bottle of wine that'll go perfectly with it. And you know what? They're going to pick a bottle of wine that will not break the bank. There's a Haskell's near you where you can save big dollars on wine. Haskell's in Bloomington. Haskell's over in Chanhassen. There's a Haskell's in downtown Excelsior right at the lake. Right off at 35, there's a Haskell's in Faribault. Our Maple Grove Super Cellar is not to be missed. A large, large footprint of wonderful wines from all over the world. Haskell's in downtown Minneapolis with lots of free parking. There's a Haskell's in Minnetonka, Plymouth, St. Paul's Highland Village. You'll find the Haskell's over in Stillwater, White Bear Lake, and Woodbury, too. And if you can't come into Haskell's, go to Haskell's.com or go to WCCO.com/wine. It'll take you right to the Haskell's website where you can peruse our summer catalog.
Sounds fantastic, Jack. Good to hear from you. Let's talk next week if you can.
I'm going to look forward to it, Denny.
Very good.